and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. Oh, when the saints go marching in. Oh, when the saints go marching in. I wanna be in that number. Oh. If only because, as a long-time resident of Britain now, I just love joining a queue. And hey, blindly joining a group of zealots marching in lockstep has never been a bad thing, right? I wonder how the rest of that song goes. I've checked this out, and It does go, oh, when the drum begins to bang. How exciting music! What a jolly experience this Saint March is proving to be. Oh, when the stars fall from the sky. What? Presumably you don't mean actual fire falling from the sky. You mean some sort of pyrotechnics, maybe a fireworks display to round off what has been a perfectly enjoyable parade. Oh, when the moon turns red with blood. I see where this is going. You can't just join a march these days without it being infiltrated by actual hardline end of the worlders. I'm sure it's just a few bad eggs. Oh, when the trumpet begins to sound. Oh, when the horsemen begin to ride. When the fires begin to blaze. Oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah, sorry guys, it's about the apocalypse. Okay. This song is misleadingly jolly and it lacks trigger warnings. Anyway, marching to our doom alongside me is the saint to my sinner, the Mirabile Dick 2 to my Mirabile Dick 1. With his halo all askew, it's the blessed Ben Vandeveld.
Blessings be upon this recording studio. Are those really the lyrics to When the Saints
Are
Marching In?
Those are some of the potted lyrics you can find on Wikipedia. Apparently there are loads of versions of it, including a version where you just sing the chorus lots of times.
Well, yeah, which is the one that we all know.
The happy jazz version.
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot of what seem to be happy jazz songs that have got some really dark undertones.
Yeah, When the Moon Turns Red with Blood was a real surprise when I scrolled down that far.
Yeah, it's like, this seems nice. Oh, it's the Book of Revelations.
Yeah, it very much is. We're getting Catholic and Christian this week, Ben. I'm so excited.
Yeah, this is completely your wheelhouse.
It really is. World's Worst Saints. It is slightly... takes an adjustment for me as an Irish person living in England to realise that people over here didn't have the same religious education and aren't as completely au fait with when you walk around a gallery knowing that the guy with the arrows in him is Saint Sebastian and things like that.
Yeah, well, no, same here. Yeah. I've got a very different religious education to 98% of the country as well.
You don't believe in saints. You walk around and you just see empty frames in carrots. It's a lovely picture of a tree with some arrows in it.
Well, you know, the thing is obviously it's because saints were very, very holy, mostly men who died horrible deaths and were persecuted for their beliefs. And as a Jew, we're like, that's all of us.
That's our thing.
Yeah, why do you think you're so special? Oh, one of you got persecuted. Come back to me when they built specific persecution premises for you, my friend.
Wow, that's a hell of a... I would love to see the debate. And just to, you know, peek into the afterlife and see the argument between the Christian martyrs and the Jews.
Well, no, because...
still going at it 2,000 fucking years later.
Well, the difference is...
Who killed Christ anyway?
The difference is that the Christian martyrs are all people who were killed for their own religion, whereas Jewish martyrs are all just Jewish mothers. Just going, oh, am I not good enough for you?
He is such a pain.
Should we announce our guest?
Please announce it.
And I should declaim it.
Yeah.
Our guest this week is an award-winning comedian and animator who over the past few years has accrued such gongs as the Hackney Empire New Act of the Year Award and the Leicester Mercury Comedian of the Year. He has made it into Dave's Top 10 Jokes at the Edinburgh Fringe and sold out runs at the Soho Theatre. It's not a surprise because he mixes wondrous myth, legend, history, William Blake poems and biblical allusions, all whilst garbed in marvellous auburn hair and with the sort of beard that you feel comes with its own saga. He has traversed the entirety of Christendom, spreading the message of his comedic gospel from Germany down to Romania, Norway down to the Netherlands. He is also...
So European Christendom, then?
The original Christendom. Okay.
The original Christendom is definitely in the Middle East, Ben.
You say that. This is me, by the way. Hello.
Hi, sorry.
Yeah. I'd just like to clarify one thing. The sold-out run at the Soho Theatre was one show, so...
Okay, the sold-out...
seems like an It's too strong a word for
a sold out walk at the Soho
A stand.
Yeah.
At the Soho Theatre. And also, I've been to the island of Iona off the west coast of Scotland, which is a lovely place just off Mull, which is where my Scottish family are from. And if you go there, well, if you go there in the 90s, there's a small photocopied sign printed on something and stuck on the wall that says, Iona, the birthplace of Christianity, which is the least accurate sign. With the least amount of commitment. It's like they knew they weren't really telling the truth. And so the quality of the sign is very poor. We're not doing this hand-painted. But stick it up, it'll impress the kids.
Well, that's what happened. Joseph and Mary, they were actually just shortbread manufacturers who had a son who decided not to go into the family business.
How persecuted does your intro feel now, Ben?
Really, to be honest, I was just thinking about Jesus being crucified on a massive shortbread. But there we are. Anyway, as you heard his sweet, dulcet, slightly pagan tones... Yeah. It is the very saintly and very funny Alistair Beckett King.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
Sorry for interrupting my own introduction.
It's good to add footnotes early on, I think, rather than end notes.
It's on brand, super on brand.
My favourite Apocalypse song that I don't like is Oh Happy Day, because the whole problem is contained just within that. Oh happy, but not for everyone else.
Yeah.
It's like, for most people, really sad day. It's got such caveats.
And Jesus washed the sins away with fire. It doesn't sort of outline this. Yeah. The washing is going to is harrowing is more an accurate term than washing in that song.
Yeah, the only apocalypse song I can think of is All Along the Watchtower.
Yeah, it's true.
Which is, I mean, to be honest, I don't really pay much attention to the lyrics. I just enjoy the banging guitar solo. Yeah.
It's are we not talking about Bob Dylan's original version?
It's just got a banging, the banging harmonica solo.
It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.
Is that an apocalypse song?
No, I don't think so. Well, it might be a nuclear apocalypse song rather than Jesus apocalypse song. Which is your favourite type of apocalypse? A nuclear apocalypse or a Jesus apocalypse?
Oh,
or Apocalypse Now?
I mean, a nuclear apocalypse would be quicker. A Jesus apocalypse, I feel like, would be fascinating to watch but not fun to partake in.
Yeah, because the Christians would be like, oh, see, we're right.
That's it. It's the smug parade. Yeah. You don't get that with a nuclear apocalypse.
You all should have taken a number and joined the queue.
The smug parade is another name for the rapture, isn't it?
Alistair, we always ask our guests what they're worst at in the world. Mm. You're clearly very good at maintaining your hirsute locks.
Thank you very much. Washed it this morning. In fact,
lovely.
It's still a little moist. You should see it when it's fully dried.
Shiny and sheeny.
But yes, listeners will just have to imagine what some amazing hair would be like.
Yeah. And then double it.
Thank you, Barry. There's a long list of things that I'm worst at. I think kayaking was one of the first things. I've only done it worse.
It is the funniest once. Olympic sport, I think, kayaking.
The instructor said he'd never seen anyone sink a kayak that way. Which I was very proud of at the time. So my technique, if you want to try it, is every time, because you're in a kayak, it's very wobbly, and you've got a stick with things on the end.
An oar, I believe it's called.
It might call it an oar. It could be a paddle, could be an oar. I'm not an expert.
Yeah.
And so what you do is every time you turn, you just go slightly too far and bring a little bit of water into the little thing you're sitting in. You're sitting in like a little egg cup holder in the middle. And then you turn the other way and you take a little bit of water in and you go lefty-righty, little bit. And what happens is you get to the point where the boat is completely under the water, but still buoyant. It's got just enough air that you haven't sunk, but you can't move because the tiniest movement, you're completely overbalanced. And you don't want to do that. That would be embarrassing.
So you've got to sink in a really balanced way.
Yes. So from an outsider's perspective, you just look like a really tall 16-year-old hippie standing up in the middle of the lake.
Growing up a Catholic, I imagine the saints sort of filled the hole in your head that the X-Men filled for me. Just they're sort of like the Catholic Marvel superheroes.
Yeah, there's one with every sort of power that you might need. There's several with every sort of power you might need.
Also, Catholicism is like, it's like if you just, because I am not in the Marvel Cinematic Universe because it is terrible, listeners.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's boring and terrible and you're all wrong. But... Just
we're all losers here.
I may not have endeared me to all of your listeners, I'm certain. But the thing is, like, so my dad was raised Catholic, but my mum isn't. So my mum's like a Protestant atheist. So The occasional forays into Catholic thought.
Yeah.
It's like when I just tried to watch one of the Avengers movies thinking, well, Joss Whedon directed this and I like the vampire thing, so this will be good. No, it's just loads of bizarre long form. It's like dipping into a soap opera that's really boring.
Yeah.
And I don't know any of these characters and I have no idea how anybody understands any of it. And Catholicism is sort of the same.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much that. You have to sort of, someone needs to do up a flow chart. I think someone has done a flow chart for the Marvel films. Could you please do this with the, because the Bible is not the right book.
Yeah, everyone's like, no, don't start with the Bible.
Don't start with the Bible, yeah. You got it. you gotta go to the Apocrypha first. Please, start with the Apocrypha.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ben.
So I was just enjoying this play out. It was great. So many, many, many saints died in many, many, many inventively horrible ways. And the first one that I looked up was a chap called Saint Erasmus, the Bishop of Formia. And he quite angered the Roman Empire. And the first time he was arrested, apparently he was freed by an angel. No, he wasn't, because they don't exist. But the second time round after his arrest, he was so angered the emperor that he was beaten, whipped, placed in a barrel of spikes, you know, that you just have hanging around, rolled down a hill, covered in pitch and set alight, and finally, after he'd somehow survived that,
he Rasputin'd his way through all of that.
Yeah, he had his stomach cut open and his intestines round around a winch, which, and you can get all of that experience for $79.95 for any stag do nowadays.
It's like he turned him into a human yo-yo there at the end.
Yeah.
Was he one of Diocletian's? Diocletian kills a lot of the saints.
No, it was Maximilian.
Oh, okay, yeah. They're the two. You go, you're reading about all these saints, and particularly the early Christians, is like, persecuted by Diocletian, persecuted by Maximilian, persecuted by Diocletian. They just take turns on him.
What did they have against saints?
Usually some hot pokers.
Strong work. And what I love about this is that basically very often the method of saint death connects to what they're the patron saint of, or what you pair to them for. So he's the patron saint of stomach ailments, colic and appendicitis.
It does seem a bit on the nose, some of these.
Yeah. Talking of weird patron saints of things, St. Giles.
Yes.
St. Giles is the patron saint of Edinburgh, but also he lived as a hermit in the south of France in the 7th century, subsisting only on the milk of a female deer, which, I've got to say, is impressive.
Was it always the same deer? Or was it the milk of female deer, or was there one female deer who was really, really draining?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, both are equally disturbing.
Yeah, because how's he getting the...
I don't know which is better or worse, to be honest. Like, keeping it in the family. Family's a deer.
Do you think that he was just, like, knew where the deer was going to graze every day and he would just lie down on the ground knowing that the deer would step over him and then he could just sort of lift it? Incredible core strength.
In disguise.
And just latch on.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's, you know, speaking as a father watching my wife breastfeed, it's tricky to get the latch. So the first few times that he was trying to...
Well, even more so with a quadruped, I assume. Yeah. I mean, I'm a vegan, so it's not really my area. Yeah.
Do you think he did it up close, or did he have, like, a long straw? And we just have to, like, on some sort of winch and just get it lower and then extend it up and try and poop onto the end of the teat.
Is that the noise of a straw touching deer teat?
Poop.
Yeah. Do you think that he was dressed in his episcopal regalia?
Or as a deer baby?
Yeah.
As a fawn?
I
don't know, but I do like what he's the patron saint of now.
He's the patron saint of breastfeeding.
Oh, right.
Which seems very appropriate for a religion that has basically sidelined women for the guts of two millennia.
Yeah, exactly. And the patron saint of breastfeeding in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
You got to wonder what he is. I mean, to be fair, as two comedians, like being the patron saint of two things that involve sucking someone dry, that feels very on point.
I've just noticed in your notes it says the milk of a female deer, which is a worthwhile note.
Very
thanks
different patron saint.
Yeah. What's the saint who sucked off a stag for Fawcett for 10 years? What's he the saint of? Slapstick comedy. Closeted homosexual.
Yes.
That's all of them,
though. Yeah. We're going to pop back to the Catholic world in a second, but I don't know how we end up here, but I discovered something called phallic saints. Apparently there are...
I've perked up.
Yeah, Barry's eyes. There are about 10... I guess they're like fertility gods, but in the Catholic world.
Oh, yeah.
But then there's a separate sort of... I was about to say pretend religion, but aren't they all? They grew up. called the Church of Saint Priapus.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Now,
I see where this is going.
Yeah. Now, if you don't know, listeners, to be priapic is to be constantly aroused.
Yeah. And he's the one you often see the statues of holding his enormous penis.
Yeah, and the Temple of Priapus is a North American pagan religion founded in the 1980s in Quebec. And it's a homosexual church.
Yes. That's
at last a church you can join.
This sounds so exciting.
Yeah, you don't want to have the biscuit during communion.
I'm not sure that's the communion we'll be engaging in, yeah, to be honest.
So there are ceremonial practices such as group masturbation.
Sorry. Have they conned the Quebecois government into giving them some sort of like charity status as a religion? Because that is the smartest gay sauna I have ever heard of.
Semen is treated with reverence and its consumption is an act of worship.
I am the holiest motherfucker you've ever heard of.
Fellatio is strongly encouraged.
Testify!
Yeah!
Testicles!
The best bit, of course, is that... that fellatio is actually a commandment and key tenet of the church. Because, apparently, fellatio will lead you on the path to world peace. Because well-fellated men, the church teaches, are less likely to make war.
Right. Yeah, probably. I don't know.
Yeah, blow each other so we don't blow each other up.
That's definitely what I told the guys in that fight that I managed to break up.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can back that up. I mean, Bill Clinton, quite famous.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of bombing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
he's not famous for it, but he definitely did it.
I'm sure Eva Braun sucked off Adolf Hitler at some point.
Oh, dear.
Sorry, guys. Had to reduce it to Hitler and Eva.
I mean, in my head, I was just imagining Hitler's sperm of tiny little swastika with tails flapping around.
Your head's a strange place, though.
Yeah, and also, no, and in my mind, kind of like, the picture of Hitler's penis was like one of those biological things, the biology diagrams, but instead of, like, the sperms coming out, it's like the beginning of Dad's Army. Every time he ejaculates, you just hear, who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler? If you want to join the Church of St. Priapus, there are 9 centres in Canada and 8 in the United States. And the largest one is, of course, in San Francisco.
I am Googling that as soon as I get home. Tell me they have hot priests.
Of course they have hot priests. The only type of priests. But for my selections, we're going to go canine. First of all, we're going to talk about St. Roch or St. Rock. He was born of nobility, but renounced his life of wealth and privilege to work amongst plague victims. Good, some good sainting.
Now, on his gap year, went to Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. And he travelled the country and did lots of healing. He sadly contracted the plague and had to retreat to a secret hut in the woods. And he was there befriended by a dog. Mm-hmm. Who brought him sustenance and licked the sores on his leg until they were healed. Oh. And when he eventually returned to civilization, loads of people who he'd previously known him were now dead. And he was imprisoned for being a leper. And the dog was imprisoned with him. And continued to minister to the sufferings of prisoners, both him and the dog together. And he is the patron saint of dogs and diseased body parts. And one picture of him... the main picture of him, he's depicted lifting a hem of his robe to reveal his leg sores while his faithful dog licks them. Which is just...
Well, dog saliva is meant to be antiseptic, so there's...
There is some...
I don't want to say truth. I don't want to use a word as strong as truth, but there's some basis in not bollocks.
So actual science behind it. I like it. But my suggestion is going to be Saint Guinefort. I think it's Guinefort, and he was not a Catholic saint. He lived in the 13th century and has been associated with a variety of miracles. And listen, it's quite hard to become a Catholic saint. There's various processes you need to go through to be canonized. But the main reason that Guinefort is not a Catholic saint is because Guinefort was a dog.
Oh, no.
And legend says that his master, who was a knight, left his infant son in the care of the dog so he could go hunting. But when he returned, he found the house in disarray, the baby was missing, the dog was covered in blood, and in a fit of rage, the knight slew the dog because he assumed that Guinefort had committed all these horrible crimes. Only after he'd slain the dog did he discover that the baby wasn't dead. And what had happened was that there was a viper under the crib. And clearly what had happened is the viper had tried to kill the baby and the dog had killed the viper.
Oh, wow.
And saved the baby. But in doing so, he clearly messed up the knight's crib too much.
Yeah.
And the knight was like, I'm sorry, Guinefort, gonna have to kill you.
That's... really sad. And then why was he canonized?
The dog was canonized.
So, for protecting the baby.
Right.
But the dog wasn't canonized by the Catholic Church. He's like a folk saint.
Oh,
folk
saying, hero. Right. So he's not on the official list.
No, he's not. He's the one that you get the unofficial biography of for Christmas.
Yeah.
There are no Panini shiny stickers of Guinefort.
I recognize that story because I have a podcast called Lawmen where we do folklore, and uh-huh. Jenny Collier brought the Welsh version of that story, in which the dog is called Gellert. That's my impression of the way Jenny says it when he comes in and thinks he's killed the baby. Gellert!
that's such a reaction. Oh, so if you want to hear that
exact story
time.
Again, but with a wolf instead of a viper,
yeah,
from a Welsh person.
Oh, so it's quite a generic folktale.
That's a generic folktale.
You do get a few of them.
Oh, dear me. Yeah. How embarrassing.
Imagine something to do with the Catholic Church not being factually accurate. Wow. I remember hearing about a Catholic nun who I think was a saint who was known to be extremely pious insofar as she was into sort of self-abasement. Except I remember hearing about this,
yeah.
And it's basically, it's just obvious that she was into S&M. And so she would have the other nuns sort of put a muzzle on her and ride her around and whip her and stuff. And everyone was going, oh, so terribly pious. I don't think that's piety. But I Googled it and it turns out that's all of them. And I couldn't find which specific nun it was that was so into sort of masochism.
Yeah.
And also I've really messed up my search history.
The line between piety and kink is off. Than wafer thin.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this is the problem I had in researching.
And that
it.
Wafer is then served.
there's of the saints, there are people who were just killed in really horrible ways.
Yeah.
And it's not really fair to judge them for just being killed in a horrible way. I don't think some of them weren't even really that Catholic.
Yeah.
You go Catholic, you get killed in a horrible way, you're a saint. Bang. That's
yeah,
all
it's
you
a bit
need.
Of an easy in, isn't it?
And the other half were just. And in fact, the whole of the Catholic Church is just sort of a series of psychosexual disorders that have somehow congealed in the form of a religion, in which they're being praised for not necessarily praiseworthy activities.
Yeah.
And, so that was so I didn't want to have a. Also, like, I looked into it, and like, they're just all anorexic, just a lot of people with serious eating disorders.
Yeah.
There's only so much fun you want to make of people who have just clearly got mental health problems,
yeah,
he said,
that's true.
Looking ahead at what he was about to make fun of. But.
Tragedy plus time.
Yeah. But,
it's fine, they're saints, they'll be fine
with
it. Yeah,
exactly. They've already got it. But, right, so one of the guys I liked Guinefort, not a real saint, was Jacques Fesch. Do you know Jacques Fesch?
Ooh, that's now it sounds familiar.
Or Jack Fresh, as I keep nearly saying. So he's not a saint, he's a servant of God. So he's sort of in line for canonization as of 1993. But
he's on the conveyor belt.
Yeah.
Along with the cuddly toy in the fridge freezer.
And the great thing about Jacques Fesch is there is absolutely no reason to canonise him whatsoever. So he was the son of a wealthy banker who murdered a policeman.
I see. They bought his way in.
Well, not even that. Right, so he was a louche playboy who never did a day's work in his life. His father was, according to... The problem with this is you have to look these up on religious websites. And while not all religious people are crazy... Everybody who runs a religious website is insane.
And they apologise. They gloss over the bad bits.
Yes. And so his father is described as being virulently atheist, which is not the way I would use the word virulent.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is a virulently sensible plan. but so he's a virulent atheist, whereas we're on side with the guy who goes on to become a murderer. So the reason he's a murderer is he wanted a boat. so mm-hmm. we could sail around the world.
Right. When was this, by the way?
The 50s. The 50s, right? And oh, first of all, I have a friend who's rich who I remember when he bought a boat, and he was saying, I'm thinking of buying a boat. And I couldn't take that seriously because I've never known anybody who bought a boat before. And I can't understand why you would want a boat. Because it's like, yes, let's go. Do you want to go bowling? Yeah, we can take my boat. Oh, no, we can't because it's a boat. They're useless. A boat is just a place where you can be with your family and friends, but in an enclosed and unsteady environment at great expense. I don't understand why anyone wants them. So I was annoyed at him.
I can see where this kayak hatred is coming from.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah. So he wanted a boat. His dad would not buy him a boat. And so he clubbed a money changer called Alexandra Silberstein on the head and stole his money. Luckily, Silberstein survives. While he's being arrested, he loses his glasses in a very sort of Velma from Scooby-Doo moment. and shoots a policeman. Whoa. Shooting wildly, he kills a policeman. And so he goes to prison and they guillotine him, I think, as a consequence of this.
Yeah, but they were still using it, yeah.
In between the Velma moment and the guillotining, he converts to Catholicism for no reason, based right. on nothing. Also, the annoying thing about this is it's the exact plot of Crime and Punishment, which yes. he could eminently have read because it had been published several decades before. So I'm questioning how genuine his conversion was. So his collected letters have been read, and the letters he says things like, I realise that I've done wrong, but I it's not earthly justice, I fear, and the real people I've hurt are my wife and daughter. Yeah, but what about the man you hit on the head? And the guy you shot.
Yeah.
So I hate this guy.
He was, you know, doing all this stuff when Pius XII, who was essentially possibly a Nazi, was the Pope.
Yeah,
so,
that's
you know,
true.
He probably was like, he sounds like my kind of potential saint.
To other Catholics.
Yeah.
It's just this last minute conversions. I've no time for you. Yeah. Conversion.
That is very, it is very much sort of like just in case.
Yeah. If you're in a foxhole, remain an atheist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like the. That's just made me think of St. Augustine, his thing where he said, Lord, make me chaste, but not yet.
Yes.
So St. Augustine was a bit of a player before he decided to eventually, you know, be a saint.
That's the other kind of saint that I haven't included. Just horrible misogynists. Yeah. Who were just famous for writing things that made everybody be horrible to women for scriptural reasons forever. anyway.
Well, like, if you're horrible to him, like, sorry, terms and conditions.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't St. Augustine who said that having sex with a woman, who, if she's on her period, you might as well have sex with a swamp. Didn't he say something like that?
Which
sounds
like,
yet another kink.
Yeah.
They probably just found a way to justify.
Yeah.
But it sounds fairly
St. Augustine, the patron saint of swamps, turns out. Yeah, he did have a lot of his stuff is about sex, St. Augustine. Mm. And singing. He said to sing is to pray twice.
Mm.
Yeah, which is quite a good line.
Is he the one who listed the sins that he committed while being a baby?
Yeah.
See that guy who said, like, oh, the sin of coveting my mother, and, you know, so he conceived himself as having been, because original sin's hard to justify.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
So you have to say, well, are these innocent babies really innocent? And he was like, no, the babies are bad. These are bad babies. Everything's fine. It's okay for them to die in infancy and go to hell because they deserved it.
Wow.
I think that's St. Augustine, but I haven't
seen. Sounds like the sort of thing you do. One of the fathers of the church.
Yeah, I mean, if you're lusting after breasts all day, that's got to be pretty sinful.
Yeah, to be fair.
That's true.
They and
know,
also,
they know what they're up to,
your mum's breasts as well.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, it should be a female deer, really, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Ideally. So that leads on to my main saint, who I hate, who I think is the worst saint. And he's not a particular villain, because some of them are real murderers and horrible people. But what I hate about this guy, I mean, his name is Simeon Stylites.
We've a friend
famous.
Of the show.
Oh, has he been on the show before?
We talked about his lodgings in our episode on the world's worst lodgings.
Okay,
but that is about 100 episodes ago, so it's delightful to revisit.
He's quite a famous saint, and his lodgings are obviously ridiculous. And if you can't remember that episode, he lived up a pole. well, strictly speaking, on a pillar, but upper pole has a very nice cadence to it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm going to stick with upper pole, if you don't mind. And here's why I don't like it. You've mentioned me being a vegan, and if that gets cut out, I'm mentioning it again now. I'm a vegan, right? And so what?
That's the 17th time you said it. We've had to cut out.
I was going to say, if you listen to Alistair's heartbeat, it just goes, "I'm a vegan. I'm a vegan. I'm a vegan. I'm a vegan."
But it does it at a much slower rate.
Yeah. the thing is, Right, so I have to, there's a couple of caveats to the vegan thing. I'm going to talk about how vegans are annoying.
Yeah.
But also, not in the way you think is what I want to get at, listeners. Because people have this thing that vegans are always banging on about being vegan. But what I would say is, like, if we lived in a world where using sex workers and prostitutes was totally normal, and you didn't want to do that, and everyone was constantly inviting you to visit a sex worker, you would find yourself telling people, I'm not into the sex worker thing, quite a lot.
Yeah.
Like, if you had several friends around and you were watching a film and they said, oh, should we all get prostitutes now? Or should we just get one big prostitute and share? You would jump in and say, I'm not into the prostitute thing. And they would be like, oh, shoving it down our throats.
Shut up. Come with, like, little salad dressings dips. As well. Little dips, yeah. And the weird little sort of plastic divider thing in their belly button.
What I'm saying is, it's perfectly reasonable that vegans mentioned that we're vegans because we live in a world where that's not usual.
But indeed.
One of the qualities that vegans have, which is annoying, is a certain piousness and a certain obsession with purity. And this is where it gets religious, because almost every religion has taboos about eating certain things or eating at certain times. And it's all about maintaining bodily purity. And veganism has the same sort of thing, you know, because the amount of effort you have to go to not use the tiniest scrap, you know, the 0.05% of whatever it is in £5 notes, the tiniest amounts of pig material that go into computer parts, the things like that. The amount of work you have to do relative to the amount of good you do in the world, which is zero, because all you don't do any moral good by not eating an animal. That's just a morally neutral action. So to imagine that you're doing moral good by not doing anything is stupid. And this is why I hate the Catholic hermits and the Catholic saints who retire from life, because it's the same idea that by living on top of a pillar, you're actually doing something really good by just sitting on a pillar, not wanking.
Yeah.
Have a wank and do some charity work.
Off the top of a pillar.
Well, I mean, get down, obviously.
Who wouldn't? Off the top of a pillar. That's the obvious place to do it.
That's what St. Priapus does.
Yeah, of course it does.
Well, the problem is he's always surrounded by people on the ground level. Because they join him worshipfully. So I don't know how much of his pillar dwelling has been covered in previous episodes. So he lived on several pillars.
They got increasingly tall.
6, 12, 22 and 40 cubits high. How high is a cubit? Higher than you would want to live on. I haven't looked it up. But 40 of anything is too high to live on.
I do like the idea that that was because he wanted to be a hermit. And you go, if you want to be a fucking hermit, stop living on a pillar in the middle of Aleppo, where everyone can see you. And then he was like, people keep coming in and annoying me, I'm going to make a higher pillar. People can see you from further away now.
They built the pillars for him. Like, yeah. It's a very weird. The saddest part of it is that his mother came to see him on the pole. Is this already been done in the podcast?
I may or may not have. I can't remember
His mother came to see him. This sounds a lot like the end of life of Brian.
Well, there is the Bible story. There's a folk song, Seven Virgins or the Leaves of Life, which is the crucifixion story from Mary's point of view, and it's very moving because it's horrible for her. Mm. And it's the same story, but she's not even allowed to come and see this guy because women aren't allowed into that area. There's no explanation for why that is, but that's the rule. And so she's saying, like, oh, your father's died from grief, will you just come down off the pole, you twat? And this gets sent as a message, and he says, no, tell her I'll see her soon, the implication being when we die and are in heaven, which is not soon enough. He lived there for 37 years. So it's like, that's really sad. Like, you've got mental problems. Get off the pole and talk to someone.
Didn't he get local boys to bring him milk and bread for his food as well?
Even before he went up there, he was known for fasting a lot. So he had just like lettuce leaves during Lent. So it's real problems. The devil, of course, tried to get him off the pole, according to his
just by pushing him.
I read Butler's Lives of the Saints about him, and Butler doesn't include any of the fantastical stuff. He just talks about the fact that his piety was so great he inspired loads of conversions. And then I read Anthony, his subject's version, where it's like, he tamed a dragon! It's like, oh! He didn't mention that, Butler! He didn't mention that implausible but exciting twist.
Was the devil dressed as one of the gladiators when he was trying to get him off the pole?
Oh, that'd be so good.
Satan arrived in the form of wolf.
What he did very cleverly was he appeared in the form of an angel with a chariot saying, God sent me, here to take you to heaven, so hop in.
Hi, I'm your Uber.
Yeah. Yeah. And he, and Stylites, or Simeon to us, he raised his right foot as if to step on and then made the sign of the cross, poof, devil's gone.
Psych.
But, because he's a self-punishing wanker, he then said to his foot, you'll stay like that forever now. And so he then didn't put his foot down again after that point.
Oh, what an absolute twat.
Presumably punishing him for thinking about getting on the devil's magic chariot. But, so his foot gets seriously, massively infected. And there's maggots in it, and the maggots are falling off the pole and landing in people. And Anthony, he tells Anthony to collect them up and bring them back so he can put them back into the wound. And then he's saying to the maggots, you should eat what God has given you. And it's, you're a disgusting maggot-legged idiot. And, well, at one point, though, and this is fair enough a miracle, the maggots roll off and then a king picks one of them up and then it turns into a pearl. And everyone's like, oh, well done. as miracles go, that is a disgusting miracle.
And that's magic. I've got some more weird patron saints of stuff. Bernardine of Siena, famous for his public preaching, and so he's the patron saint of public relations and advertising.
Ugh.
Yeah. St. Drogo was a famous a Flemish noble who was afflicted with a disease which made him look very unattractive, apparently. But he was also so holy that he kept visiting shrines across Europe, so he became the patron saint of ugly people, bodily ills, and weirdly, coffee houses.
Hmm.
Don't know where the last one comes from.
Coffee houses.
Yeah, they're always... you look at the, like, the... By the way, if anyone doesn't know, there are several patron saints for everything. Like, mm-hmm. There'll be 20 patron saints of doctors and other things. But you go down the list and there'll be patron saints of towns in Bavaria and things like that. And then there'll be patron saints of random things like coffee houses. And you have no idea where that's come from. St. Gummerus, a Belgian who lived in the 8th century, he had an abusive wife. And they separated. And after they separated, he founded an abbey. And he's now the patron saint of difficult marriages. Which I really like. St. Lidvina was a 15-year-old girl who got injured while ice skating and is the patron saint of ice skaters, which seems counterintuitive. Why would you have a bad ice skater as the patron saint of ice skaters?
In each of these cases, the saint is the person who has proven themselves to be either unfortunate or incapable when it comes to the thing that they're the patron saint of.
Indeed, yeah. There's St. Vedast, who's the patron of children who are late in learning to walk. Which, you know, everything needs a saint. And I also really liked reading about saints who were killed in interesting ways. We talked about that. St. Stephen, stoned, one of the first Christian martyrs, stoned to death in 36 AD in Jerusalem. He was one of the early evangelists who went around and angered the rabbis after the death of Jesus by carrying on his message. But he was stoned to death, yet is often depicted holding a bucket of stones. Like, holding the method of his own execution.
Well, if I take the weapons, then you can't get me.
Yeah. St. Paul, who was then called Saul, was one of the people involved in helping organise his execution as well. So Paul, who was considered the author of probably half of the New Testament, was before he had his conversion on the road to Damascus and changed his name very cunningly to Paul from Saul, was very rabidly anti-Christian and helped, you know, cast some stones against Stephen.
It makes me... It's something that's probably not covered enough in RE is what an accurate shot biblical rabbis were with a bit of aggregate.
He's saying they must have had, like, good sights.
Yeah, well, in my mind, they're kind of like there with like a baseball mitt with the Star of David on.
Yeah. Like, doesn't say how big the stones were, I suppose.
I mean, I've always thought that stoning is sort of like a fist-sized stone.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, if it's one massive boulder and on a rope and they just cut it and then fall, that seems like, yeah.
I don't think Wile E. Coyote is in the Bible.
St. Wiley.
St. Wiley. St. Wiley of Acme.
I mentioned St. Sebastian earlier on. He pisses me off because the famous paintings of St. Sebastian always show him with loads of arrows in him. He did not die from those arrows.
Wait, did he get them and then survive?
Yeah, he got them. St. Irene nursed him back to health. And then he'd been, you know, chained to a tree or tied to a tree and shot by archers. He's the patron saint of archers, of course, by the way, by the orders of Diocletian. When he was nursed back to health, he went back to Diocletian to tell him what a dick he was being, and Diocletian very sensibly had him clubbed to death. So he was actually killed by the clubbing, not by the archers. But I suppose the archers make the better painting for the Renaissance painters, so...
Yeah.
It's a little bit more of a dramatic mise-en-scene.
I mean, a lot of these are just self-destructive people who can't learn a lesson.
Yes, yeah, they keep bashing their heads against the same brick walls.
Shoot me full of arrows once, shame on me. I've said that wrong, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Don't go back to Diocletian.
Yeah. I also read about St. Philomena, who's one of those slightly bullshit saints who... Basically, in the early 1800s, they found some bones of what looked like a young girl in the catacombs in Rome with the words, "Peace be with thee, Philomena," engraved on the wall, and some tiles which had pictures of some arrows and some anchors and a palm and some flowers, sort of early Christian symbols. And when they found these bones, they're like, oh, interesting bones. And then a Neapolitan nun said she'd had a vision which told her that these were the bones of a 13-year-old Greek princess who refused to marry Diocletian and was martyred by him for refusing to do so. And basically, on the visions of this nun, they canonized her about 35 years later. They just found some bones in a tomb and decided, yeah, she'll do. She's another saint.
Slightly worse than that is Saint Ursula, which is, I think, is it the murder of the thousand virgins?
Yeah, virgins in some towns.
That didn't happen.
Yeah,
it's just a martyrdom that didn't happen. A thousand virgins were not murdered. Saint Ursula doesn't exist. Still, it's Catholicism.
Yeah, I mean,
finding
a thousand virgins in any one concentrated area is a tricky enough prospect. I read about our patron saints, Ben.
Of failure?
No, because we know that's ourselves.
Oh, right. I was going to say
self-worshipping.
Kevin Keegan.
No, they're patron saints of actors and comics.
Oh, of course.
I found three, in fact. We've mentioned in the past St. Vitus, who was killed when he was only 13. He's the one who a lot of the dancing plagues in the Middle Ages.
St. Vitus's dance. St. Vitus's dance. For like epilepsy or something like that.
Yeah, so they think a lot of those plagues broke out around his shrines or on St. Vitus Day. So he's the patron saint of dancing and various other things.
Horrible fits.
Yes, in fact, one of the patron saints of actors, comics, dancers, dogs, epilepsy, oversleeping, which ties into the actors thing, snake bites, storms, Serbia, and Prague.
Wow, hang on, so he's the patron saint of both dogs and snake bikes. So
yes.
He is the patron saint of my patron saint.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah. He was a 13-year-old boy, apparently, when he was martyred. He fled. Basically, his parents were pagans in Rome in the 290s, and he turned Christian and fled with his tutor and nanny, who were a couple. So basically, it sounds like his family had hired evangelizing staff, who then absconded with their son, showed up in Rome to drive a demon out of one of Diocletian's sons, which apparently he did, but Diocletian didn't appreciate the effort and had him beheaded. So he's one of the patron saints. We also have Saint Maturinus, who was alive around the year 300, same time as St. Vitus. Not mentioned until the 800s, though. He was secretly baptised, even though his dad was tasked with exterminating all the Christians in the region in which they lived. So that's a big risk to take. That's really rebelling. Some of his demons... after he converted, he carried out various miracles, driving out demons and calming riotous individuals, which makes it sound like he's sort of appropriate to be a patron saint of... comedians, because you can deal with hecklers and sound things. And there's also St. Genesius, who was a performer in plays which mocked Christianity during the age of Diocletian again. And he was in a play one day where they mocked baptism. So they were carrying out sort of pastiches of the various sacraments. And during the baptism bit, he had an experience and converted during. Basically, he felt like he had a weight on his chest. And then he had a vision of an angel appearing to him with a book outlining all of his sins, and he said he needed help, and the actor who was playing the priest got a little too into his role and went, "It's fine, I'll baptize you." And you're like, "You're not actually a priest, you're just playing the part. Calm down." He's like, "No, this is the part I was born to play." So he blessed him on stage at his request, and he wouldn't repent it. It was unfortunate that they were performing this play for Diocletian himself at the time. So immediately beheaded.
I mean, absolutely the worst moment to suddenly convert to Christianity there.
Is it front of Diocletian himself? I've three short stories, one of which is going to be my favourite. I want to just mention Saint Christina the Astonishing.
Yes!
She's really good. She was
she wasn't a magician's assistant.
No, she sounds like she should be, though. She was an orphan at the age of 15 and then suffered a seizure in her 20s while working as a shepherdess. And people thought she died and they held a funeral for her. But during the funeral, she awoke and levitated up to the rafters of the church. She didn't.
It was a mechanism.
You could see wires. yeah. And she said the reason she levitated was because she couldn't bear the smell of the sinners in the church around her at the time. And so she returned. She said she had been sent back to life to convert sinners. And so spent her time dressed in rags, seeking destitution and suffering. And she was jailed for a bit because people thought she was possessed. And when she was released, she then sought out extreme penance, which is like extreme sports, but with more, you know, self-harm. She would throw herself into burning furnaces. She would plunge herself into frozen rivers for hours on end. She would let dogs bite her. And my favourite one, because I cannot not envisage the cartoon version of this. She would throw herself into a river, let it carry her downstream, and be turned round and round and round on the mill wheel of the mill.
Just like, ah!
And maybe the weirdest thing about her of all is that after all of this, she died of natural causes in her 70s.
How did they live so long? 37 years on a pole. Natural causes. Half a life on a mill wheel.
That's a fucking miracle if ever I heard one. I read about Saint Rita, whose saint day is the 22nd of May. She wanted to be a nun, was forced to marry by her family instead at the age of 12. She married a nobleman called Paolo Mancini, who was cruel and abusive and had affairs. And
he was an Italian midfield general, wasn't
he? Yes, sounds like a Paolo Maldini. Yeah.
Oh, that's what I'm mixing her up in.
Mancini, he was a composer. She calmed him down eventually, but he was involved in a lot of the regional disputes that were going on in northern Italy in the late 14th century and early 15th century. So he was stabbed to death by his enemies. And she, in trying to mend bridges, offered forgiveness to them at his funeral. However, Paolo's brother managed to convince his nephews, Rita's two sons by Paolo, to avenge their father's death and drew them to go and live with him instead of with their mother at the time. And sort of was telling them, we've got to get revenge on these guys who killed your dad. And so Rita decided that she would have to beg God to kill her sons rather than let them commit the mortal sin of murdering their dad's enemies. So she decided to pray to God to let him to take their her sons, and within a year they had died of dysentery. And so she at that point decided she'd had enough suffering and wanted to join a monastery, but the monastery said no, you come from a bad family, which is fair, and they told her to reconcile her family with her husband's killers. So the story diverges at this point. She either did that and was accepted into the monastery or didn't do that, but was lifted over the wall of the monastery by three saints and plucked down in there and let to live there for the rest of her life. She got a visible wound on her head one day from a bolt of lightning while praying to the cross of Christ in the...
Oh, I've seen pictures of it, and she's got like beams of light coming out of her third eye. Of like a Timothy Leary book.
This is to show that she shares his suffering. It is a bit weird. Basically, she fell over in the shower and had to come up with an excuse. You can imagine.
Just style it out. Yeah, got struck by
lightning. It's actually stigmata. It's forehead stigmata. It's very common. And she is the patron saint of sickness, wounds, marital abuse, and the impossible. Which I really like. Which is up there with St. Jude being the patron saint of hopeless causes, which I really like as well.
I love that. The patron saint of Andy Williams.
Yeah. But my choice for the world's worst saint is St. Julian the Hospitaller.
Mm-hmm.
He is a patron of various things, including jugglers and circus workers, and innkeepers, boatmen, pilgrims, travellers. But maybe his best story is the one that gives him the thing he is best known as being patron saint of. When he was born, his dad said he saw some pagan witches curse him. Don't know what they were doing in the, you know, the birthing room at the time, but they were there. And he said the curse was that he would eventually kill his own parents.
This is a borrowing
of the Oedipus story.
I came across this guy while I was looking for someone worse than Stylites.
Yeah, he's pretty bad. His mother would then, obviously, when she heard this, cried her eyes out, and she would cry often during his childhood and watching him grow up into a handsome young man, being devastated that knowing that he was eventually going to kill his parents. So at the age of 10, he found out either from her or from a stag why his mother was crying every day, and so decided that to prevent himself from killing his parents, he was going to go far, far away. So he walked for 50 days. He either was living in France, Belgium, or in Italy at the time, but however wherever he was living, he ended up in Galicia and decided to make his own life there. This is in the early first century. And he married a wealthy widow woman and spent 20 years very happily married and rising up through the ranks of the Galician nobility, living in a nice castle. And then 20 years on, his parents decided to go looking for him. Why would you go? Why would you go back into the house? It's like the red shirts in fucking Star Trek. We're going to pass on this mission. They went on a walk looking for him, and they eventually came to Galicia, and they went to church. And when they were leaving church, they saw a pious woman sitting outside, and she offered them shelter. This was Julian's wife. And she went back to the castle with them and said, actually, my husband's out hunting at the moment, but he'll be back later on. Stay, have some strudel, it'll be lovely. Meanwhile, Julian away hunting, the devil whispered to Julian, he didn't, the devil doesn't exist, that his wife was in bed with another man, and Julian was incensed and rushed back to the castle, where his wife had said to his parents, what a delight, you're going to see your son again. Please have the master bedroom.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. He rushed into the master bedroom to see a couple lying in his bed and stabbed them and killed them. Went downstairs to have some food, presumably afterwards, without checking who they were, and was astonished to find his wife sitting in the dining room about to have dinner. And so his wife comforted him and said, no, you will repent, we'll make good. And they had no children, but they had a lot of money. So they decided that what they would do was found lots and lots of hospitals, 7 hospitals across Europe and 25 hostels as well. And sadly, they came to a bit of a sticky end. They were killed by thieves, both of them, on the road somewhere. But among his many things, these patron saint of, like I said, innkeepers and pilgrims and travellers, he is also the patron saint of murderers. If any profession needs a patron saint.
So it's, I think it's that's like the human version of the dog snake story.
Isn't it?
Yes, it is.
These saints could benefit from just having a little check.
Yeah.
That'll be my recommendation.
That's why I think there's going to be fewer and fewer saints these days, because, you know, there are going to be mobile phones around.
Yeah, because most people would immediately put it up on Instagram.
Yeah.
And then by the time they've done that, the thing would have revealed itself to be...
FYI, your rents are here. I've given them the big room. We're going to be in the spare room tonight.
Yeah. It's like every Shakespeare play would be ruined by just waiting 10 minutes to
check whether you're doing your thing. Yeah.
So, people weren't so impulsive. A note has arrived. Good, because I was just about to stab myself. Perfect timing.
So our candidates for the world's worst saint are Ben's suggestion of Guinefor, the baby-guarding dog who met a sticky end because his master didn't realise he'd actually been saving a child. Alistair's suggestion of friend of the show, Simeon Stylites, pillar dweller. And my suggestion of St. Julian the Hospitaller, patron saint of murderers. strong work, everybody. I don't think I'm going to pick Guinefor because he was a good boy.
He was a good boy.
He's such a good doggo. We can't make him the worst saint.
He's also not a saint.
Yeah, and therefore a bad saint by not being a saint.
But then we do know all dogs go to heaven. So, you know, could have ended up that he was.
Do all dogs go to heaven?
So says the film title, Ben.
Okay, well, I'm not going to argue with that.
but I think Guinefor deserves better treatment than being decried on this podcast.
Yes.
Which leaves us with Simeon. He's virtue signalling atop his pillar.
What, doing semaphore?
Yeah. Going, look how holy I am. And the man, the Oedipus of the Catholic pantheon. It's a hard choice.
St. Julian actually did do some murders.
He did do some actual murders.
Simeon just dropped maggots on strangers.
Yeah.
So, which is most disgusting, I ask.
Yeah, and I
depends
think...
depends how neat a murderer you are.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know, maybe he didn't wash the sheets afterwards. I think because we've had Simeon has sort of won an episode already, so let's add another saint to the ones that we've gotten here. Let's add St. Julian the Hospitaller, the patron saint of murderers, as the world's worst saint.
Right, and they're going to play each other in the final.
Yes, for the final, the ultimate. Before we go, I've got some of the world's worst news of the week, and this is the news from The Mirror in the UK that you can now visit a 5D porn cinema in Amsterdam complete with bouncing chairs.
So this is bad news.
Well, I don't know. It's the worst news for the other 4 dimensions, maybe.
What is the 5th D?
Dick.
I know, like I set that up a little too neatly.
That's it. We've been waiting an hour for that. Yes, the mirror tells us that this particular place features bouncing chairs, air, wind, and water jets to help stimulate all five senses, apparently.
And I'll be honest with you, I'm not showing off, but I have had sex, and none of those things were involved. Like, no bouncy chairs, no water jets.
Yes.
Perhaps I'm showing how narrow my experience is.
It sounds like some of the Disney theme rides, though, you know, where you just get the splash with water. The owner of the place is a woman called Natalie, and she says that it's actually a suitable place to spend an evening with your loved ones. It's a bit like an amusement park, and we're definitely not just going after the tourists for our audience. Come with your wife, have a laugh, try something different. She says the experience
will leave you... You just need the first part of that sentence.
Yeah, come with your wife. She does say the experience will leave you feeling energised. Lots of things happen so fast that when you're in the audience, when it's finally all over, you're left feeling energised. You want to get back out there, have a beer or a coffee, and talk. Process what just happened. Normally, I just want to sleep, to be honest. So, yeah, the cinema's called 5D Porn. It's located in the Vallen, and it'll be showing movies made in collaboration with Kim Holland, who's apparently a big name in the Dutch porn industry. So, field trip, Ben?
Sure, why not? Patreon listeners.
Yes, that's, if we can get to 30 Patreon donors, we'll go to Amsterdam and do a live episode
from the 5D porn cinema. Hello and welcome to...
Try not to get water on the mic.
Yeah.
Hope that's water. Oh, no, it's just a passing deer.
but it's like, why can we not get in the cinema when it's a field trip from the Church of St. Priapus?
Before we go, Alistair, where can people find out more about you and your work?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter, which is Mr. ABK, spelled MisterABK, because some other ABK got in there first. You'd be amazed how many there are. It's really annoying. or my website, abeckettking.com. Alistair is spelled too difficultly to be included in any of those earls.
Cool. And your podcast, as you said before, is the Lawmen, L-O-R-E.
Which is a pun. It only works in an English accent.
Yes.
So it's L-O-R-E men.
Very
so,
good.
So Lawmen.
Yeah.
Lawmen from in an American accent. The pun doesn't work.
Very good. Well, check it out if you're into that sort of thing. Meanwhile, we're all off to chuck Ben onto a mill wheel and see if it turns him into a saint. Benjamin the Astonishing.
Oh, yes, please.
Thanks for listening to Worst Report. Goodbye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.